I'm William Cooper, and you're listening to the Hour of the Time. For those of you listening in the state of Florida, there will be a United Nations flag-raising ceremony. I don't know what day they're going to do it, but the ceremonies will last from October 23rd through October the 28th. You should be able to find out. The flag will be flown over the Gainesville, Florida City Hall. We fought this battle last year, and we won. But you can find out when the ceremony will be, when the flag raising will be, by calling the mayor, Jim Painter. That's the mayor, Jim Painter, at 904-334-2006. Once again, 904-334-2006. Or the city manager, Wayne Bowers, at 904-334-2011. That's 904-334-2011. And there's another number, 904-334-2220. That's 904-334-2220. Everybody down there in the state of Florida, find out when that ceremony is going to be and take care of business. Now, folks, tonight is a broadcast that you're going to want to tape, I can assure you. So if you don't have a tape in your recorder right now, you'd better plop one in. If you don't have a tape recorder, you can order tapes of the Hour of the Time. If you are a member, tapes are $8 per tape. If you are not a member, they are $10 per tape. And you can make check or money order out to Annie, specify the date and the subject, and send it to the Intelligence Service, Post Office Box 1420, Sholo, Arizona, 85901. Don't even, folks, don't even go to the bathroom during this broadcast. You will regret it.
Who in mortal chains, who in
shall I say? Who by fire and who by water? Who shall I say is calling? If you pay attention to the music that we play on this broadcast, you'll find that it always has a message. And the message is always important, and it always has something to do with the subject of the broadcast. Now, ladies and gentlemen, tonight's broadcast is taken from a book entitled Freemasonry and Catholicism, an exposition of the cosmic facts underlying these two great institutions as determined by occult investigation, published by L. N. Fowler and Company, 29 Ludgate Hill, EC4, London, England. Also published in the United States by the Rosicrucian Fellowship, International Headquarters, Oceanside, California, 1916. You'll find that the older the publications, the more truth you will find. Pay very close attention, ladies and gentlemen, for I like to verify the facts in their own words. It is extremely important that you understand what is happening, whether you agree with it, whether you take one side or the other. It is important that you know. For it is not fun to be the flotsam and jetsam in a war. All humanity must make a choice and must make that choice soon. I pray that yours will be the right choice. And I'm going to quote verbatim throughout this text. We shall endeavor to show the cosmic root of both of these institutions, the purpose of each, and the training which each will inaugurate, if successful. Also the nature of the soul quality which may be expected to result from each method. Our opposition is not fanatical, are blind to the merits of the Catholic religion. However, the Catholic is our brother as well as the Mason. We would not say a disparaging, irreverent word against this faith or those who live by it, and should we seem to do so in any passage, the wrong will be due to inadvertence. The reader is requested to note that we distinguish sharply between the Catholic hierarchy and the Catholic religion, but the former are also our brothers. We would not throw stones, either physically or morally, for we know our own shortcomings too well to attack others. Thus, our opposition is not personal, but spiritual, and to be fought with the weapon of the Spirit, reason. We firmly believe it to be for the everlasting good of mankind that the Masons should win, and cannot therefore be sure to present the Catholic side in a perfectly unbiased manner. But we ask our students, for whom this is written, to believe that we shall try to be just. Of the cosmic facts we are certain, but bias may creep into our conclusions. Therefore, each must use his reason to test what we have to say, vis-a-vis prove all things and hold fast that which is good. The great law of analogy is everywhere the master key of all spiritual mysteries. And although Masonry and Catholicism do not begin till we arrive at the earth period, they have their prototype in the earlier periods. We shall therefore briefly touch upon the essential facts. In the Saturn period, the earth in the making was dark. Heat, which is the first manifestation of the ever invisible fire, was the only element then manifest. Embryonic mankind was mineral-like, the only lower kingdom of evolving life. Unity was everywhere observable, and the lords of mind, who were human then, were at one among themselves. In the Western wisdom teaching, we speak of the highest initiate of the Saturn period as the Father. In the Sun period, spelled S-U-N, the root of a new element, air, was evolved, and coalesced with the true fire, which Mark again is always invisible, and which manifested as heat in the Saturn period. Then fire burst into flames, and the dark world became a blazing ball of luminous fire mist at the word of power, quote, "Let there be light," end quote. Let the student ponder well the relation of fire and flame. The former lies sleeping, invisible in everything, and is kindled into light in various ways. By a blow of a hammer upon a stone, by friction of wood against wood, and by the chemical action, etc. This gives us a clue to the identity and state of the Father, quote, "whom no man hath seen at any time," end quote, but who is revealed in, quote, "the light of the world," end quote. The Son, spelled S-O-N, who is the highest initiate of the Son period, spelled S-U-N. As the unseen fire is revealed in the flame, so also the fullness of the Father dwelt in the Son, and they are one as fire is one with the flame in which it manifests. This is the root of all true Son, spelled S-U-N, or fire worship. This is the root of all true Son, spelled S-U-N, or fire worship. All look beyond the physical symbol and adore, quote, "our Father who art in heaven," end quote. The mystic Masons of today hold this faith in fire as firmly as ever. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, I've taught you that this is a battle between the philosophers of fire and those who are of the waters of faith. You will also understand many of the things that are becoming politically correct now, such as the legitimizing of homosexuality. Listen very closely. I am making no judgments. I am just telling you this is what it is. Like it or not, believe it or not, those in power, those changing the world today, those who are ticking off the minutes of the timetable toward the New World Order, they believe in this religion. And if they believe in it, it makes no difference whether you believe in it or whether you like it or whether you laugh at it. It will affect you. Make no mistake. And I continue. Thus it will be seen that the unity which prevailed in the Saturn period continued in the Sun period. The ordinary humanity of that time has now evolved to the glory of archangels. Some were more advanced than others, but there was no antagonism among them. Our present humanity had advanced to a plant-like stage and was slightly above the new life wave started in the Sun period, and unity also here prevailed. In the Moon period, contact of the heated sphere with cold space generated moisture, and the battle of the elements commenced in all its fierceness. The heated ball of fire endeavored to evaporate the moisture, force it outwards and create a vacuum wherein to maintain its integrity and burn undisturbed, but there is and can be no void in nature. Hence, the outrushing steam condensed at a certain distance from the heated ball and was again driven inwards by the cold of space to be again evaporated and propelled outwards in a ceaseless round for ages and ages as a shuttlecock between the separate hierarchies of spirits composing the various kingdoms of life, represented in the fire sphere and cosmic space, which is an expression of the homogeneous absolute spirit. The fire spirits are actively striving to attain enlargement of consciousness, but the absolute rests ever clothed in the invisible garment of cosmic space. In it, all powers and possibilities are latent, and it seeks to discourage and check any attempt at expenditure of latent power as dynamic energy required in the evolution of a solar system. Water is the agent it used to quench the fire of active spirits. The zone between the heated center of the separate spirit sphere and the point where its individual atmosphere meets cosmic space is a battleground of evolving spirits at various stages of evolution. The present angels were human in the moon period, and the highest initiate is the Holy Spirit, Jehovah. As our humanity and the other kingdoms of life on earth are variously affected by the present elements, so that some like heat, others prefer cold, some thrive on moisture, and others require dryness, so also in the moon period, among the angels, some had affinity for water, others abhorred it and loved fire. The continued cycles of condensation and evaporation of the moisture surrounding the fiery center eventually caused incrustation. And it was the purpose of Jehovah to mold this red earth, translated Adam, into forms wherein to imprison and quench the spirits in the fire. To this end, he issued the creative fiat, and the prototypes of fish, fowl, and every living thing appeared, even including the primitive human form, which were all created by his angels. Thus he hoped to make all that lives and moves subservient to his will. Against this plan, a minority of the angels rebelled. They had too great an affinity for fire to bear contact with water, and refused to create the forms as ordered, but thereby they at the same time deprived themselves of an opportunity of evolution along the conventional lines and became an anomaly in nature. Furthermore, having repudiated the authority of Jehovah, they must work out their own salvation in their own manner. How this has been accomplished by Lucifer, their great leader, will be made plain in the following articles. For the present, suffice it to say that in the Earth period, when various planets were differentiated to provide proper evolutionary environment for each class of spirits, the angels under Jehovah were set to work with the inhabitants of all planets having moons, while the Lucifer spirits have their abode upon the planet Mars. The angel Gabriel is representative on earth of the lunar hierarchy, presided over by Jehovah. The angel Samael is ambassador of the martial forces of Lucifer. Gabriel, who announced the coming birth of Jesus to Mary, and his lunar angels are therefore the givers of physical life, while Samael and the hosts of Mars are the angels of death. Thus originated the feud in the dim dawn of this cosmic day, and that which we see as Freemasonry today is an attempt by the hierarchs of fire, the Lucifer spirits, to bring us the imprisoned spirit light, that by it we may see and know. Now let me read that again for you so that you don't miss it, and this is out of their own mouths. Thus originated the feud in the dim dawn of this cosmic day, and that which we see as Freemasonry today is an attempt by the hierarchs of fire, the Lucifer spirits, to bring us the imprisoned spirit light, that by it we may see and know. Catholicism is an activity of the hierarchs of water, and places holy water at the temple door to quench the spirits seeking light and knowledge and to inculcate faith in Jehovah. When they speak of the Catholic Church, they are talking about Christianity, ladies and gentlemen, in all of its forms. As the vernal equinox is said to be at the first point of Aries, no matter where in the constellations it falls, by precession, So the point where the human seed atom comes from the invisible world and is taken in hand by the lunar god of generation. Remember the generative force, the phallus of Osiris, the lost word of Freemasonry, the obelisk, the Washington Monument. Jehovah, through his ambassador, the angel Gabriel, is esoterically the first point of Cancer. This is the cardinal sign of the watery triplicity and is ruled by the moon. There, conception takes place, but where the form built of water and its corner and its concretions alone, it could never come to birth. So 4 months later, when the fetus has reached the stage of development corresponding to the second sign of the water triplicity, Scorpio, the eighth sign, which corresponds to the house of death, Samael, the dauntless ambassador of the Lucifer spirits, invades the watery domain of the lunar hierarchy and introduces the fiery spark of the spirit into the inert form, to leaven, quicken, and mold it into an expression of itself. There, the silver cord, which has grown from the seed atom of the dense body located in the heart, since conception, is welded to the part that has sprouted from the central vortex of the desire body located in the liver. And when the silver cord is tied by the seed atom of the vital body located in the solar plexus, the spirit dies to life in the supersensible world and quickens the body it is to use in its coming earth life. This life on earth lasts until the course of events foreshadowed in the wheel of life, the horoscope, has been run, and when the spirit again reaches the realm of Samael, the angel of death, the mystic eighth house, the silver cord is loosed, and the spirit returns to God who gave it until the dawn of another life day in the school of earth beckons it to a new birth, that it may acquire more skill in the arts and crafts of temple building. Remember this wheel of life, also known as the circle of life. And remember the crafts, the arts of temple building. About 5 months after the quickening, when the last of the watery signs, Pisces, has been passed, the representative of the Lucifer spirits, Samael, focuses the forces of the fiery sign, Aries, where Mars is positively polarized, so that under the impulse of their dynamic energy, the waters of the womb are voided, and the imprisoned spirit liberated into the physical world to fight the battle of life. It may blindly butt its head against the cosmic forces typified by the first of the fiery signs, Aries the Ram, which is a symbol of the brute strength brought to bear upon the problems of life by the most primitive races. Did you get that? The most primitive races. Remember, I taught you that this is all about race also. And don't forget it. The signs, the symbols, the language is all around you. You just don't know how to read it. Art may adopt the more modern method of cunning as a means of attaining mastery over others, which characteristic is indicated in the second of the fiery signs, Leo the Lion, the king of beasts. Or perchance it may rise above the animal nature and aim at the stars with the bow of spiritual aspiration typified by the last of the fiery signs, Sagittarius, the centaur. The centaur is just ahead of the watery sign Scorpio, a warning that one who tries to reach that last stage and assert his divine right of choice and prerogative as Freemason, a son of fire and light, will surely feel the sting of the scorpion in his heel, which will goad him onward upon the path where men become, quote, wise as serpents, end quote. It is from this class that mystic masonry is recruited, with men who have the indomitable courage to dare, the unflagging energy to do, and the diplomatic discrimination to be silent. A very mystic movement has its legend, which tells in symbolic language its status in the cosmic order and the ideal which it tries to realize. From the Old Testament, containing the Atlantean mystery teaching, we learn that mankind was created male, female, bisexual. Let me read that to you again. From the Old Testament, containing the Atlantean mystery teaching, we learn that mankind was created male, female, bisexual, and that each one was capable of propagating his species without the cooperation of another, as is the case with some plants today. Later on, we were informed Jehovah removed one pole of the creative force from Adam. The early humanity, and that there were henceforth two sexes. The esoteric teaching supplements this information by stating that the purpose of this change was to use one pole of the creative force for the building of a brain and larynx, wherewith mankind might acquire knowledge and express itself in speech. The intimate connection between the organs, brain, larynx, and genitals is evident to anyone upon the slightest examination of facts. The boy's voice changing at puberty, the mental deficiency resulting from overindulgence of the passional nature, and the inarticulate speech of the mentally defective, with many other facts which might be added, prove this assertion. According to the Bible, our earliest parents were forbidden to eat of the tree of knowledge. Don't go away. There's a lot more, ladies and gentlemen, and it's going to absolutely amaze you. At least some of you new to this broadcast.
to the stars. I'm gonna help myself through our trouble.
The symbology, ladies and gentlemen, is absolutely everywhere. It surrounds you everywhere you look, and you cannot read it. Isn't it amazing? The Circle of Life, sung by a homosexual Elton John from the movie The Lion King. Everything about that motion picture is telling you the same story that I am relating to you tonight on this broadcast. And you didn't even in your wildest dreams understand any of it. And it was a battle between the races. At the end of the movie, you didn't see old Scar anymore, and you certainly didn't see any hyenas, did you? Now, this is the only commercial you're going to get. Call Swiss America Trading. Ask them how you can get your hands on some real money. And to do it, I'm going to count upon you so that we can get back into the meat of tonight's subject rather than waste any time telling you what you already know. 1-800-289-2646. Thank them for sponsoring this broadcast. Tell them that you're a steady listener and you'll get red carpet treatment. 1-800-289-2646. You'll be glad that you did. Philosophers of Fire, ladies and gentlemen, also known as the Magi, the priests of the mysteries, practice magic. Magic is the art of deception. They communicate by a language known as symbolism. And the deception is everywhere. The pyramids are temples housing knowledge. They were never tombs for any king. They house the knowledge of the world that was known by the builders, the Freemasons of that day, the followers of Lucifer for all time. Remember, the philosophers of fire are of Mars. Where now are they trying to tell you they found pyramids? On Mars. To what? To perpetrate the external threat from space scam in order to scare you into accepting a world government to oppose that threat. And there's much, much more. Once you catch on to the symbology, they cannot fool you any longer. And what was the great tome touted by Stanton T. Friedman and William Moore? Majestic 12,
top secret/magic. Project Aquarius, the new age. And I could go on and on and on and on. Now let me continue with the tome at hand. According to the Bible, our earliest parents were forbidden to eat of the tree of knowledge, but Eve, seduced by the serpent, did eat, and later induced the man to follow her example. Who the serpents are and what the tree of knowledge is may also be determined from certain passages in the Bible. We are told, for instance, that Christ exhorted his disciples to be, quote, wise as serpents and harmless as doves, end quote. The so-called curse pronounced upon Eve after her confession declares that she must bear her children in sorrow and pain, and that the race will die. It has always been a great stumbling block to Bible commentators as to what connection there could be between the eating of an apple, death, and painful parturition. Parturition is the giving of birth. But when we are acquainted with the chaste expressions of the Bible, which designates the creative act by such passages as Adam knew Eve and she bore Cain, Adam knew Eve and she bore Abel. How can I bear a child, seeing I know not a man, etc.? It is very evident that the tree of knowledge is a symbolical expression for the creative act. Then it is plain that the serpents taught Eve how to perform the creative act, and that Eve instructed Adam. Therefore, Christ designated the serpents as harmful while admitting their wisdom. To get at the identity of the serpent, it is necessary to invoke the esoteric teaching, which points them out as the martial Lucifer spirits, rulers of the serpentine sign Scorpio. The martial spirits of Lucifer, of the serpentine sign Scorpio. Their initiates, even so late as the Egyptian dynasty, wore the uraeus, or serpent symbol, in the forehead as a sign of the source of their wisdom. All of this just confirms everything that I have ever taught you. I continue. As a consequence of this unauthorized use of the creative force, humanity ceased to be ethereal and crystallized into the coats of skin, our physical body, which now hides from them the gods who dwell in the invisible realms, and great was their sorrow at this loss. Generation had been originally established by the angels under Jehovah. It was then performed in great temples under propitious planetary conditions, and parturition was then painless, as it is today among wild animals where the creative function is not abused for the purpose of gratifying the senses. Degeneration resulted from the ignorant and unauthorized abuse inaugurated by the Lucifer spirits. Regeneration must be undertaken in order to restore man to his lost estate as a spiritual being, and to free him from this body of death wherein he is now encrusted. Death must be swallowed up in immortality. To attain this object, a covenant was made with humanity when it was expelled from the garden of God to wander in the wilderness of the world. According to that plan, a tabernacle was built after a pattern planned by the God Jehovah, and an ark symbolical of the human spirit was placed in it. Its staves were never taken out of their place to show that man is a pilgrim on the earth and may never rest until he reaches the goal. There was within it a golden pot with manna, man, fallen from heaven, together with a statement of the divine laws which man must learn in his pilgrimage through the wilderness of matter. This symbolic ark contained also a magic wand, an emblem of the spiritual powers called Aaron's rod, which are now latent in everyone on his way to the haven of rest, the mystic temple of Solomon. The Old Testament also tells how humanity was miraculously led and provided for, how after the warfare with the world, it was given peace and prosperity by the before-mentioned King Solomon. In short, stripped of all embellishments, the story relates the salient facts of man's descent from heaven, his principal metamorphosis, his transgression of the laws of God Jehovah, how he has been led in the past, and how Jehovah would wish to guide him in the future till he reaches the kingdom of heaven, the land of peace, and again docilely follows the lead of the divine ruler. The Masonic legend has points of variance from, as well as agreement with, the Bible story. It states that Jehovah created Eve, and you'd better listen very closely here, ladies and gentlemen, because this is going to spill the beans on these guys. The Masonic legend has points of variance from, as well as agreement with, the Bible story. It states that Jehovah created Eve, that the Lucifer spirit, Samael, united with her, but that he was ousted by Jehovah and forced to leave her before the birth of her son Cain, who was thus the son of a widow. Then Jehovah created Adam to be the husband of Eve, and from their union Abel was born. Thus, from the beginning, there have been two kinds of people in the world. One, begotten by the Lucifer spirit, Samael, and partaking of a semi-divine nature imbued with the dynamic, martial energy inherited from this divine ancestry, is aggressive, progressive, and possessed of great initiative, but impatient of restraint or authority, whether human or divine. This class is loath to take things on faith and prone to prove all things by the light of reason. These people believe in works rather than faith, and by their dauntless courage and inexhaustible energy, they have transformed the trackless wilderness of the world to a garden full of life and beauty, so lovely, in fact, that the sons of Cain have forgotten the garden of God, the kingdom of heaven, whence they were expelled by the decree of the lunar god Jehovah. Against him, they are in constant rebellion because he has tied them by the umbilical cable toe. They have lost their spiritual sight and are imprisoned in the forehead of the body, where it is said Cain was marked. They must wander as prodigal sons in the comparative darkness of the material world, oblivious to their high and noble estate, until they find the door of the temple and ask and receive light. Then, as free Mason, or children of light, are the sons of light, they are instructed in methods of building a new temple without sound of hammer. And when they have learned this, they may, quote, travel in foreign countries, end quote, to learn more of the craft. In other words, when the spirit realizes that it is far from its heavenly home, a prodigal, feeding upon the unsatisfactory husks of the material world, that apart from the Father, it is poor, naked, and blind, when it knocks at the door of a mystic temple like that of the Rosicrucians and asks for light, when it receives the desired instruction after due qualification by building an ethereal soul body, a temple or house eternal in the heavens, not made with hands, and without sound of hammer, when its nakedness is clothed with that house, see Corinthians chapter 4, verse 5, then the neophyte receives, quote, the word, end quote. The open sesame to the inner worlds and learns to travel in foreign parts in the invisible worlds. There he takes soul flights into heavenly regions and qualifies for higher degrees under more direct instruction from the grand architect of the universe who fashioned both heaven and earth. Such is the temperament of the widow's sons inherited from their divine progenitor Samael and given by him to their ancestor Cain. Their past history is a struggle with adverse conditions. Their achievement is victory wrested from all opposing forces by indomitable courage and persistent effort, unchecked by temporary defeat. On the other hand, while Cain, governed by divine ambition, toiled and tilled the soil to make two blades of grass grow where there was only one, Abel, the human progeny of human parents, felt no urge or unrest, himself a creature of Jehovah through Adam and Eve. He was perfectly contented to tend the flocks, also created by God, and to accept a livelihood from their divinely begotten increase without labor or exercising initiative. And now you know why the cattle industry is in trouble. Ladies and gentlemen, now you know why the great push toward vegetarian habits. Now you know why through centuries and millennium the trek toward world totalitarian socialist government never ceases. I continue. Remember, he's talking about the sons of Adam and Eve. This docile attitude was most pleasing to the God Jehovah, who was extremely jealous of his prerogative as creator. Therefore, he cordially accepted the offering of Abel obtained without effort or initiative, but scorned the offering of Cain, because derived through his own divine creative instinct akin to that of Jehovah. Cain then slew Abel, but did not thereby exterminate the docile creatures of Jehovah. For we are told, Adam knew Eve again, and she bore Seth. Seth had the same characteristics as Abel, and transmitted them to his descendants, who to this day continue to trust to the Lord for everything, and who live by faith and not by work. By arduous and energetic application to the world's work, the sons of Cain have acquired worldly wisdom and temporal power. They have been captains of industry and masters of statecraft, while the sons of Seth, looking to the Lord for guidance, have become the avenue for divine and spiritual wisdom. They constitute the priestcraft. The animosity of Cain and Abel has been perpetrated and perpetuated from generation to generation among their respective descendants. Nor could it be otherwise, because one class, as temporal rulers, aim to lift humanity to physical well-being through conquest of the material world, while the priesthood in their role as spiritual guides urge their followers to forsake the wicked world, the veil of tears, and look to God for comfort. One school aims to turn out master workmen skilled in the use of tools wherewith they might wrest a livelihood from the earth, where they may wrest a livelihood from the earth, which was cursed by their divine adversary, Jehovah. The other produces master magicians, skilled in the use of the tongue in invocation, and by the use of the tongue they gain support from the toilers here, and pray themselves and their charges into heaven thereafter. About the future in store for the sons of Cain and their followers, the temple legend is also most eloquent. It states that from Cain descended Methuselah, who invented writing, Tubal Cain, a cunning worker in metals, and Jubal, who originated music. In short, the sons of Cain are the originators of the arts and crafts. Therefore, when Jehovah chose Solomon, the scion of the race of Seth, to build a house for his name, the sublime spirituality of a long line of divinely guided ancestors flowered into the conception of the magnificent temple called Solomon's Temple. Though Solomon was only the instrument to carry out the divine plan revealed by Jehovah to David. But Solomon was unable to execute the divine design in concrete form. Therefore, it became necessary for him to apply to King Hiram of Tyre, the descendant of Cain, who selected Hiram Abiff, the son of a widow, as all Freemasons are called, because of the relation of their divine progenitor with Eve. Hiram Abiff then became Grand Master of the Army of Construction. In him, the arts and crafts of all the sons of Cain who had gone before had flowered. He was skilled beyond all others in the work of the world, without which the plan of Jehovah must have remained forever a divine dream, and could never have become a concrete reality. The worldly acumen of the sons of Cain was as necessary to the completion of this temple as the spiritual conception of the sons of Seth, and therefore, during the period of construction, the two classes joined forces, the underlying enmity being hidden under a superficial show of amity. It was indeed the first attempt to unite them. And had that been accomplished, the world history from then on would have been altered in a very material manner. The sons of Cain, descended from the fiery Lucifer spirits, were naturally proficient in the use of fire. By it, the metals hoarded by Solomon and his ancestors were melted into altars, lavers, and vessels of various kinds. Pillars were fashioned by workmen under the direction of Hiram Abiff, the arches to rest upon them. The great edifice was nearing completion when he made ready to cast the molten sea, which was to be the crowning effort, the merging of the molten metal of fire with the waters of faith. It was to be his masterpiece. It was in the construction of this great work that the treachery of the sons of Seth became manifest and frustrated the divine plan of reconciliation. They tried to quench the fire used by Hiram Abiff with their natural weapon water and almost succeeded. The incidents which led up to this catastrophe, their meaning, and the sequel will be revealed, ladies and gentlemen, on Monday night. Now again, I'm not making any judgments on this. I am just merely telling you it is what it is. And if you're smart, you will learn from it. If you are not smart, you will learn nothing. And this will have been a futile exercise in a long line of many. And also, if you're paying attention, you should understand that it is all metaphoric. For they're not really attempting a unification at all. They believe that man, because of his creative power, is God. And they worship the generative force or the phallus. And they believe that all things in nature are renewed by fire, and that is why, throughout history, they have always burned their enemies. What took place at Waco, Texas, was a battle between the philosophers of fire and those of the waters of faith. The waters in that battle lost, and they were consumed by the fire. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. And God bless you all. Do you good service, ladies and gentlemen, to remember President William Clinton sitting in the audience in Oklahoma City holding one red rose, and to remember the ceremony of the roses for all of those who died in the bomb. It's time those of the waters of faith woke up to the reality of the world and entered the battle. Enter the battle or perish. For those are the stakes. Those are the only stakes. And God helps those who help themselves.